Welcome back here on Can't Wait, where we are continuing to talk about the NBA free agent movers and shakers. And we've gone long enough without talking about the Sacramento Kings. You poke your fun at the Knicks and the Lakers and all the other, you know, kind of glamour franchises that are down in the dumps a little bit, but the Sacramento Kings are the NBA's true embarrassment. The league always seems to have one dummy at the poker table who doesn't even seem to know the rules about the game you're playing, and the Sacramento Kings thought that they were going to be a player somehow, but have day by day continued to do the most head-scratching things imaginable, from trying to trade DeMarcus Cousins to not trading DeMarcus Cousins to drafting a friend of his from Kentucky just to appease him to trying to hire John Calipari for what? Now, okay, Matt Milner, talk to me about the Kings. It's a disaster.
Well, the Kings to me are the great example of how NBA free agency is all about knowing who you are and what you can be.
And where you're at on that curve.
Where you're at, exactly. And, you know, we talked about a little bit with the Knicks and the Lakers that, you know, expecting that the superstar free agents were going to want to flock to those teams in the situations that their rosters were currently in was not realistic. And to their credit, both teams found ways to be able to pivot to some extent and not have it be a total loss, the Knicks more so than the Lakers. The Kings, I think, even more so than those teams, completely misevaluated where they're at. And it's not a story that begins a week ago. It's a story that begins back in the fall.
Yeah.
When they get off to a hot start, Mike Malone's doing a really nice job for that team. You know, Boogie is locked in and playing good defense and motivated and actually gets along with Mike Malone.
He is looking like a potential all-NBA first-teamer.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
The Darren Collison signing doesn't seem that bad.
He's working out. He's a nice little point guard.
Yeah, and all of a sudden you can see a team that even though you don't necessarily think they're going to be there at the end for the playoffs, you think this is the year when they turn the corner towards respectability.
Yeah.
And in the Eastern Conference, you know, would have been a playoff team, but in the West, you know, settle for being at least competitive.
9 or 10, but in the mix.
Yeah, and then you build off of that.
Yeah.
Well, so then, you know, Boogie gets sick in kind of a fluky way.
Yeah.
And he's out for an extended period of time, and predictably, they lose a lot of games. I mean,
yeah, they lose their best player.
They lose their best player, the focal point of their offense, and things fall apart. Not a surprise. Well, the Kings use it as their opportunity to get rid of Mike Malone, who by all accounts had done everything you could ever expect him to do in that scenario.
But he was hired by the previous regime. They keep doing this thing backward.
Right.
Where they hire the coach, then the GM, and then the GM fires the coach, and then they have to hire a new GM, and they're never settled.
Yep. So you get rid of the defense first guy, the guy who your superstar player likes and cares about playing
hard for. The
first guy. First guy ever. So then
And from the San Antonio Spurs tree.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. So then Ty Corbin is thrown in as like a placeholder, and we can just kind of skip past that because he was always good enough. Yeah, he was always just going to be kind of the guy to fill the seat until they finished a deal with someone like George Karl, which they do. And when you bring in George Karl, it's a sign that you want to be in a more of a win-now mode.
Yes.
You don't bring him on to be rebuilding. He fits in with Vivek's vision of he wants, you know, basketball offense to be like Jazz, you know, and he wants it to be freewheeling and open and all this stuff.
And so, George Karl is a legitimate genius when it comes to coaching
basketball. Without question.
X's and O's genius.
Yep. And he also has a demonstrated record of not getting along with stars, especially, you know, ones who have difficult personalities, which Boogie does. So now we're at the end of the season. You've got George Karl, you're saying we want to win now. And in order to win now, you've got to make the most of this offseason. So what do? You depose your GM, who actually knows something about how the collective bargaining agreement works.
Pete D'Alessandro was actually the guy that was the cap manager in Denver and did a really nice job.
Yeah.
And so the Kings swiped him, thinking that he was going to kind of be he was seen as a guy that was like the right-hand man to Masai Ujiri,
right,
who's one of the best GMs in the league.
Yeah.
And so they made a pretty smart hire, but then completely emasculated him 6 months into the job because he probably disagreed with Vivek about playing 4-on-5 or some dumb nonsense that he thinks will work.
Yep. So then you bring in Vlade. You bring him in right before the draft. We touched on this on our draft recap. He hasn't had the chance to scout the players. He doesn't know, you know, really, for guys who are where they're picking, you know, star-level guys potentially, doesn't really know about them to be able to assess whether they're draftable, and doesn't understand the CBA.
Has clearly no idea.
Yeah, he's never had a job like this before, right?
I mean, no. And he hasn't been around
the
league.
Off the street almost.
Yeah, he hasn't been around the league in the time that they signed this new CBA.
Right.
I feel like I kind of know it sort of just by reading about it. Right. But if you put me in charge of an NBA team, every other GM would fleece me.
Right. Yeah. So anyway, we're finally caught up with free agency. And what you've seen before July 1st even rolls around is just this trend of not knowing who you are and who you want to be. So you get rid of your defensive-minded coach, and then 6 months later you draft a defense-only player in Willie Cauley-Stein.
Yes.
You get rid of a coach who gets along with your superstar, who's the linchpin of your team. Then you bring in a coach who doesn't get along with him, wants to move on, but you decide, you know what, the superstar is too important. We can't move on from him.
And they were seemingly shocked that George Karl would want to say in personnel matters.
Right. Right. So no idea what's going on. Then free agency opens up and they do this bonkers deal with the 76ers.
Well, it was like Sam Hinkie saw what was going on and said, I'm going to try to rip them off.
Right.
Yes, I'm sure that's what happened.
Yeah, because the Sixers aren't players in free agency.
Right.
Obviously, no one's coming there. But Sam Hinkie, for as much of a schemer and as much as I don't necessarily agree with the way he's running that team, he's very smart, mm-hmm. and he knows what to do with cap space. He understands the CBA. He comes from that Daryl Morey school of asset allocation. He sees a mark. He sees somebody like a tourist sits down at a poker table, and he's like Ed Norton in Rounders. You know, they it's chum in the water.
Right. So they give up real assets.
Jason Thompson, Carl Landry. You know, they each make about, what, $6
million? Yeah, yeah.
And the number 9 pick in last year's draft, Stauskas?
Yeah.
Nick Stauskas?
And then they give
up. The guy that Vivek pushed to draft.
Right.
And they didn't need him.
And you know how we know, because he let people in the draft room.
He let Grantland film it.
Right. So we know he was pushing for Stauskas. So they get rid of Stauskas. They get rid of a future protected first. They get rid of 2 pick swaps. And we've asked the Nets, you know, if those pick swaps mean anything.
Anyone that's ever done a pick swap has come to regret it.
Right. And they do all of that to clear space for what? To be able to try to bring in, you know, Rondo and Wesley Matthews, or Rondo and Monte Ellis. I mean, there's no cohesive framework there. So predictably, as everyone thought, they get Rondo on a deal that, oh, by the way, they could have done before they executed this salary dump.
Right.
And then to save face here, they sign Kosta Kufos, who we all actually like.
Yeah,
sure,
he's a nice player.
Sure.
Yeah, but
that's the most sensible move they've made.
Except they've got 2 centers
right.
before they sign
well,
him.
I like that you can play. I think you can play Kufos and Boogie at the 4, and I think that's what they're going to try to do. I don't disagree with Kufos at this price tag as being part of your big man rotation if you're going to be good.
Right.
But they're not going to be good.
And now,
Kufos wasn't going to make this money anywhere else. It's a lot of money for Kosta Kufos.
That's why I'm asking is, why does he sign it?
4 years, 33. Okay. That's a lot of money for Kosta Kufos.
It is.
And now, who are they sniffing around? They're sniffing around Josh Smith. They're sniffing around Lou Williams. They're sniffing around guys who, again, there's just no cohesive plan there. They bring in more chuckers. They bring in guys who can't shoot. It's so easy to build around a big man like Boogie. It really is. It's not that hard.
Yep.
And they're just doing all of the wrong stuff. Sorry. I'm done.
No, it was great. You're right. I'm glad that...
It's a crazy set of circumstances.
It is. It is a crazy set of circumstances. I didn't know all of the backstory necessarily. I found it fascinating what you bring to the table with that conversation. Because, I mean, I know that Sacramento's a mess. I see what they're doing is a mess. But you're right. I mean, there's a real reason why it's happening. It's meddling from ownership and just an inability to settle on things, right? It's like this attempt to always hit a home run.
Yeah.
What we're talking about is the Knicks realize now we can't hit a home run.
We have to hit singles and doubles
and put guys on base. Get a double off the wall and drive in a run and that sort of thing.
We'll take our big swing with Porzingis, but in the meantime, we're going to collect some real players.
Yeah, and so Sacramento just doesn't have any sense of that at all. And I, you know, I have no hope for him. And it's sad because when I think back about the Bibby Kings and how great that team was and how much fun it was to watch, it's sad to see him in such disarray now. And especially with Boogie, who I have on my fantasy team. He's my keeper, and I love watching him play. Yeah,
he's so good.
That hurts me.
During the chaos, Bill Simmons tweeted out that they had a 30 for 30 coming out about the heartwarming story of Vivek Ranadive and Kevin Johnson saving the Sacramento Kings because they were all set to move. I mean, they were going to leave Sacramento, but this venture capitalist came in and saved them from the disastrous Maloofs and has somehow gone above and beyond when it comes to dysfunction in Sacramento. A couple other things. When you're a team that is not going to contend, and you see what the Western Conference looks like, you don't try to throw yourself into the bottom two seeds and just stay there forever. You have to take a long view of this. Mm-hmm. They don't have a draft pick next year if they fall outside of the top 10. The Chicago Bulls get that pick because of a J.J. Hickson trade they made a couple years ago. Yeah. That's bad. And they've just now gotten good enough to probably not finish in the bottom 10, but definitely not make the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And that's the worst spot you can be as an NBA franchise. And it seems like that's what they're seeking out to be. And this fascination with Rajon Rondo, I'm sorry, it is so stereotypically Kings because he's a name and he was great 3 or 4 years ago, but didn't this guy just quit in the middle of a playoff series on a team that voted not to give him a playoff share? Isn't he the same guy that doesn't drive to the hoop anymore because he doesn't want to shoot his 34% from the foul line foul shots? The same guy that is notoriously moody and will undoubtedly get in a fist fight with George Karl before the end of the season.
Right? How's that going to go? You've got two geniuses like those guys headbutting each other.
It couldn't be a worse fit. And then they also, they got saved from themselves by pairing him up with Monte Ellis.
Right.
What they want to do, the team they want to put on the floor, was Rajon Rondo, Monte Ellis, Ben McLemore, Rudy Gay, and DeMarcus Cousins. Yeah. That was the vision they had when they made this trade with Sam Hinkie and the Sixers. Mm-hmm. Each of those five guys is notoriously moody and weird, separate from each other. You can survive with one guy in a stable organization with that kind of talent. You put them all together with George Karl,
and Willie Cauley-Stein on the bench.
Yes, and Willie Cauley-Stein. We haven't even gotten to, like, Darren Collison is going to be furious by all this.
He's mad.
And it's almost like they're seeking it out just so we can talk about it. You know, the way that somebody would try to get headlines because all press is good press? No, you're building a basketball team. It's a nightmare what you're doing. But to pivot away from, because we could talk about these, they're irrelevant. They're just fun to talk about because... What are they doing? But I want to talk to you guys about a couple of other free agent signings. I want you guys to give me your favorite free agent signing and a free agent signing you think, I don't see how that's going to work. Matt Milner, who do you like in terms of free agency this summer?
I loved Greg Monroe to the Bucks.
That's fun, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's a player who we all thought for months and months and months, oh, he's going to the Knicks.
Yeah.
He's going to be their plan B. And I actually think that in that scenario, it would have gone very poorly for everyone involved.
It's a bad fit.
I think it would have created inflated expectations for how he changes the complexion of their team. I don't think that he would have meshed well with Melo. For a lot of reasons, I just think that wouldn't have gone well. The Bucks, on the other hand, they're a team that I think fits what he can bring to the table perfectly.
They really struggle to score the ball.
They struggle to score the
ball. And they struggle to rebound.
Yeah, and those are the two things he does. And even for all his limitations as a player, he is somebody who's a legitimate 2010 threat and is an outstanding post player.
He's very efficient.
Very efficient. He's a good passer.
Very good.
And if you get him the ball in the right spots, he's not just going to be a black hole. You know, you can integrate him into a system. And remember, he's been playing basically out of position for the last couple of years. I mean, they've had to use him as a power forward, you know, so
like a high elbow facilitator because Drummond can't play any further than 2 feet from the rim.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's not the best utilization of his his abilities. So you plug him in on a team where you've got a lot of long, feisty perimeter defenders, so he's not going to be as exposed defensively as he would be in other situations. It gives them a player who, in the last 6 seconds of the shot clock, you throw it down to him, and he's going to get you a decent shot. He can create inside out. And, oh, by the way, the Bucks being in the Eastern Conference, it's so different than the Kings situation we described. Mm-hmm. If you're already a 5-6 seed in the East and you add a difference maker that vaults you into the, you know, potentially, you know, 3 or 4 spot if their players develop the way that they can reasonably expect them to, as we saw with the Eastern Conference playoffs this year, fluky things happen.
Injuries can really swing a series.
If you get a puncher's chance to just make it to the finals, right?
Yeah.
Who knows what can happen?
Yeah, or you know, at a minimum that you make it to the Eastern Conference Finals, and at least then you're perceived as being a fringe contender, and it's something to build off of. And I just really love
excite
that
your
move.
Fan base.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's a contract as well that under the new CBA, that's going to seem like very reasonable money. And it's, you know, it's not a long-term commitment. There's just, he fits in age-wise with their development cycle. I don't really see much of a downside. I really like that move.
It's funny because it's the biggest problem the Bucks have is they have too many good guys now. And you would not associate that with the Bucks because they have a lot of guys in that 6'9 to 6'11 range that would conceivably kind of take minutes away from Monroe, or Monroe would take minutes from them. But now they're a really interesting trade candidate. Jason Kidd's a really good coach, especially when it comes to juggling minutes and creating weird matchup lineup problems. Mm-hmm. So I think ideally what they want to do is play all these guys about 32 minutes a night and just always have mismatches on the floor. They have this unique situation where they have Greg Monroe, Jabari Parker, and Giannis Antetokounmpo, who nobody quite matches up with, and definitely nobody matches up with all three. And so you're able to shift around and play with lineups and always have a strange look. Mm-hmm. They still don't shoot the ball very well from the outside. We still don't know what their plan is with Michael Carter-Williams, but they did bring in Gravis Vasquez.
Right. Yeah, that was another, I think,
a sneaky
move.
Little move. They kind of overpaid for him.
Yeah.
A first-round pick's a lot to give up for Gravis Vasquez.
Yeah,
but
it is.
That's a nice player for them. That's a real veteran, savvy ball handling point guard that can put all these young guys in great positions to score.
Yes.
I think Jabari has a monster second season. I think we were just barely starting to see what he could do before that ACL injury. Mm. I think Giannis in year 3 is going to be very good. I think Monroe is good right now. This is a potential 3 seed we're looking at.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
The way that you talk about teams in the East is how do they match up with the Cavs?
Right.
I think that's a nice little thing to throw at Cleveland. I mean, as far as anything else that the East has to offer, you have all these long guys to bother LeBron. You have all this size. You can match up with Mozgov and Thompson and all the big guys that Cleveland can throw at you. They've got long arms to put in front of Kyrie Irving. I mean, they swarm defensively. Jason Kidd, as we mentioned, very good coach. The Monroe signing is also a very big deal in that Milwaukee outdid big market teams with their basketball situation. Goes back to what we were talking about in segment 1. Greg Monroe picked the Bucks when money was equal across the board because he liked what they were doing basketball-wise. That's a big deal for the rest of the league going forward. So, Rusty, what do you see in free agency?
Well, it's tough because Milwaukee's the team that I love. I'm really been high on them for about a year. And when you look at Jason Kidd, when he came over there, there was a debacle, everything that happened. And you really thought that things were going to fall apart there. And instead, he's done amazing things.
He's a good coach.
He's a really good coach. But so, I mean, you know, DeAndre Jordan going to the Mavericks. If I'm a Mavericks fan, there's not a whole lot to be excited about, but that guy is a decent player to bring onto your team.
The Mavericks, Matthews.
Exactly. And bringing Wes Matthews and Dirk at 36 or 37, however old he's going to be. But he's going to age gracefully, a little like Tim Duncan. And so, I mean, that's a nice move for the Mavericks. Again, the Mavericks, that's where they've got a culture, they've got a bit of a crazy owner, but he keeps it in check all the time and keeps trying to keep them in contention without falling out of the playoffs, really. He keeps them as a competitive team. And even in the West, that's pretty big. I mean, because you could fall into a Houston situation where it's just a matter of matchups, you know, and you end up in the Western Conference Finals, even though, and the West is very difficult, very, very difficult.
Yeah, but and it only got harder.
And it only just got harder, exactly. But if you see, I mean, the series between the Clippers and the Spurs, that was a series where that could have been the champion of the Western Conference in the first round that lost.
Came down to two plays.
It came down to a couple plays. And so the Mavericks keep putting themselves in a position to be there.
Yep.
And as a fan base, if I'm a fan of that, I like that.
Yes.
You know. And so I really like DeAndre Jordan, Wesley Matthews, too.
I'm glad you brought up Dallas because they've been trying to make these home run moves in free agency each summer, but they haven't quite landed that guy. They would they would always pivot back into signing those 1 or 2 year deals to keep a competitive team around Nowitzki, and it was just kind of resulting in a 6-7 seed permanent spot, but always a puncher's chance because Rick Carlisle is one of the five best coaches in the league,
absolutely,
and Dirk Nowitzki is the best 7-foot shooter we've ever seen. So they finally hit pay dirt this summer, and you know who might be the reason why? Chandler Parsons.
Isn't that weird?
Chandler Parsons is basically John Calipari in the NBA. I don't think we can talk on air about what it is Chandler Parsons offers these players when they come on these visits, but DeAndre Jordan spent about 5 straight days with Chandler Parsons doing whatever it is Chandler Parsons do. And,
wow.
Yeah, it's Chandler Parsons was the reason Dwight Howard came to Houston. Chandler Parsons knows the hot spots. Chandler Parsons know what he's got a they used to call it a little black book. You know, now it's now it's Tinder, now it's DMs on Twitter, and Chandler Parsons is kind of king of that. So
I mean, the guy signed his last contract in a club.
Yes. And filmed it.
I did not know that. Yeah. I did not know that.
Yeah, so Chandler Parsons swung the balance of power away from the Clippers into the Mavericks. And in a basketball sense, DeAndre Jordan fills a lot of what they've been missing. They have not had that rim protector alongside Dirk since the prime Tyson Chandler title times. So they see DeAndre Jordan being that Tyson Chandler type defensive difference maker. But at, what is he, 25? And he's also... the knock on him is he's not a good offensive player, but he's a great offensive player at the very limited things that he does. He sets great screens, he rolls to the rim very hard, and he is one of the best finishers above the rim. Unfortunately, I don't know who's playing point guard for Dallas.
Yeah,
they don't have ball handling right now. They have all the other pieces in place, but you take DeAndre Jordan away from Chris Paul, the best point guard of his era, hard stop. That's just what he is. He's probably the best point guard since Isaiah, and you could start talking about him as the best point guard since Magic. He is phenomenal. You take DeAndre Jordan away from him, are those lobs there in the same way? Does that pick and roll space open up quite that way? He's not a post-up guy. I think he thinks he's a post-up guy. He's like Dwight Howard in that he thinks he should be getting the ball on the block to make Hakeem dream shakes, and that's not going to work. But if you have Nowitzki stretching the floor away from him to give him those baseline back cuts and things that DeAndre can do, it makes sense. But who's handling the... Right now, it's Ray Felton. I mean, they might bring back J.J. Barea. Jeremy Lin is talking about coming there. What I want to see happen is Ty Lawson get traded there in some sort of three-team deal where the Nuggets get something nice in return. But, that's unlikely. But I think that is the kind of thing that would make them into a fringe contender.
Yeah.
But Wes Matthews at the 2-3 spot with Chandler Parsons. If Wes Matthews heals up, it's a nice-looking team. DeAndre Jordan's a nice addition. And it's finally a summer where things worked out for the Mavericks.
Well, it is and it isn't, though, because you touched on a lot of the limitations. I mean, they got the guys they wanted, right? The free agents that they met with, their targets, they were able to rein in. But are they better than the 6th seed in the West?
I don't think so. I think they're better than, because they would have been the 6th seed in the West had they gotten one. That's kind of just how they typically pivot from losing out on these guys.
Right.
They would have figured out a way to get a Kosta Koufos, or they probably still would have hung around there.
Yeah.
But now they can win that series.
Yeah. I mean, they've got no depth.
None.
They've got no starting caliber point guards. They've got a very thin margin for error because they're relying so much in terms of making their spacing work. They're relying on Dirk to be able to be healthy and to keep being Dirk. And I just think that, though I don't think they were wrong to make those signings. And Jordan in particular, I think regardless of those fit issues, if you have the chance to sign him, you do it, no question.
Because you're paying for his prime.
And at a position where it's difficult to get that production. So,
and he's a real difference maker for them defensively.
No question. So no problem there. Wesley Matthews, I mean, I know that the market sort of dictated it, but I'm very nervous about bringing in a guy like that coming off of an Achilles injury.
It's the biggest risk-reward signing of the summer.
Especially because so much of his value was defensive as well. Mm. You know, that
if he can't recover and slide his feet the same way he used to be able to, he becomes pretty one-dimensional and just another two-guard.
Yeah. And at a minimum, that's, I think you're expecting that there's a year of getting his comfort level back. Even
100%.
If somehow he gets back by, let's say, you know, New Year's or by, you know, the Christmas Day game or something like that, you don't just get back full speed from that. It takes some time. So for a team that has a Dirk length window of opportunity right now, you know, there are a lot of risks there, but you know, I'm sure they're happy, and you're right that they have more of a puncher's chance now maybe than they would have with Kosta Kupfer or bringing back Tyson Chandler or something like that.
And it's I think the way that they look at that is point guard being the deepest spot in the league, that they can try to cobble that together while somebody might come available in a weird, like a Ty Lawson-esque situation.
Like Ty Lawson, yeah.
That's how you would pounce. But I think the point about the depth is a real one, because they're kind of starting to look like Miami West, where the Miami Heat look like a contender on paper with their five or six. Mm-hmm. That's what they got. They got those five or six. And trying to supplement that and play a 100-game season, That's going to be a tall order. And
well,
especially
and one
with Dallas
goes down, and then you see what happens with Miami, right?
Yeah.
I mean, as soon as they lose Bosch, they had a hard time.
Yeah, although I mean, as the resident Heat homer here, I think that they have a much, much better bench than the Mavericks, because first of all, you've got Josh McRoberts coming back, who, if he's healthy, is a very, very...
He's a tricky player.
He's a quality NBA player who good NBA teams can figure out ways to get him on the court for 25 minutes a game.
He does a lot of stuff.
Yeah, and a Boris Diaw kind of, you know, just a versatile player.
I always liked him as a poor man's Lamar Odom.
Yeah.
He's a really good passer, and he's got, like, sneaky ball skills for a 6'10 dude.
Right, exactly. So you get him 20-25 minutes off the bench. Birdman, even though he's, you know, 87 years old, Birdman still plays really well. As long as his role is limited, you give him 15 minutes a game, he can still protect the rim, he can dunk, he can rebound. I mean, he's a very high-quality fourth big man. Chalmers is somebody who is very infuriating, but is still just a couple years away from having, or a couple years removed, rather, from having been, you know, a starting point guard on championship teams.
A nominal starting point guard alongside...
Yeah.
LeBron,
the real point guard.
Yeah.
But again, you don't need him to be the point guard on the team. He's really a combo guard. If his shot's falling and, you know, he's plugged in defensively, he can be a perfectly adequate ninth guy on your roster.
Would he start for the Mavericks? Because he might.
He would.
Yeah.
He would definitely start for the Mavericks.
Yeah.
And then you've got Justice Winslow, who, again, you don't over rely on rookies, but by all accounts, you know, is a guy who should be able to contribute 15-20 minutes.
Ready to play.
Your bench rotation. I mean, that's a four-guy bench rotation of NBA players.
Yeah.
Let's go through that game for the Mavericks, right? J.J. Barea.
Who won the finals for them.
Yeah.
He was the difference maker. When they started him, all of a sudden, you know, he's a sneaky, but you don't want to play him 82 games at 35 minutes a night.
Right.
He's 5'6".
Yeah, and he's a guy who, if his shot's not falling, it's hard for the rest of his game.
He doesn't really offer much else.
Yeah. So,
but he's a good pick and roll point guard.
Yeah, he's a good player. I like J.J. Barea. And then you've got Justin Anderson, who you're counting on as a rookie when the Mavericks basically have zero success drafting over the last decade.
They don't develop. Rick Carlisle does not play the young guys.
No,
true. But Justin Anderson's a little older than a typical rookie, and I like his game for what they do.
Yeah. Okay. So now name another bench player.
No, they don't have anybody.
I don't even think they have someone on the roster.
No, but the way that they look at that is Carlisle's good enough to coach up whatever nonsense they cobble together, because you do want to land those big names and then figure the rest out.
Sure.
But yeah, they're going to have a hard time putting together a list of 15 names for an opening day roster.
And the other problem with being Miami Heat West is that you're in the West.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you look at... But what they did was weaken one of those teams.
True.
Ahead of them.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, what do the Clippers do now? Do you think... Are you buying into the JaVale talk?
Well, he's terrible. I mean, he's just not good enough. I mean, they probably will have to sign him because who else is out there for what they can afford? Mm-hmm. JaVale McGee... We've been watching this JaVale McGee nonsense since, what, 2006 now? Just, at some point, the tantalizing physical gifts will not match his basketball, his lack of basketball IQ. It's just not going to happen for him. So if they're relying on JaVale McGee to be their 30-minute-a-night center on a championship contender, it's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. Kendrick Perkins is who they're going to sign before they sign JaVale McGee because Doc Rivers still believes that 08-09 stretch of the Celtics is undefeated when they had all their guys healthy. Mm-hmm. So they're going to bring in Kendrick Perkins to play that same role that he played for Oklahoma City, where he completely gums up their offense for 10 minutes a half until they pull him off the floor and they go small ball and just try to win that way.
And a shorthanded Cleveland team wouldn't even use him.
No, he cannot play. Yeah. He's not good enough. He's just not good enough to play in the NBA anymore, but he will start for the Clippers on opening night. That's just where they're headed. That's what Doc does. That's what GM Doc does. But losing DeAndre is a disaster. But we from the Clippers' point of view.
Oh yeah.
But there were real personality, because people just don't get along with Chris Paul. Like, nobody seems to get along with Chris Paul. But DeAndre especially. You read that story that Kevin Arnovitz put out right after the deal, where it seemed like he felt like he was getting unjustly criticized and was not included in the way that he hoped to be. Mm-hmm. Makes a lot of sense. But I also see it from Chris Paul's point of view, where you can't play this guy during crunch time. His foul shooting became such a problem, not only... you know, just him missing free throws, but taking them out of the rhythm of their offense.
Right.
Chris Paul was getting just infuriated, having to stop the game every 2 minutes because this guy can't make his free throws. So now I look at this team having a big hole at center, obviously, and not being able to repair it. But their small ball lineup could be the most potent five-man offensive unit this side of the Warriors. When they play Blake Griffin at center, Paul Pierce at the four, Lance Stephenson at the three, J.J. Redick at the two, and Chris Paul at the one, that is a mind-blowing offensive unit. But that you can't just get by with small ball through 82 games. You know, even though you want to see... look, the Warriors did it. You know, the Warriors won the title. No, they had Andrew Bogut to match up when you needed him. They had Maurice Spates. They had David Lee. They had Festus Ezeli. They had size. Depth. Who are the Clippers center? They traded away Spencer Hawes to get Lance Stephenson. They don't have a legitimate center on that roster, and if it ends up having to be Kendrick Perkins and JaVale McGee, they're going to lose in the first round. Mm-hmm. They just are. So losing DeAndre at a cap situation where they cannot replace him, even half of his talent, is so bad for this year. But it puts them in a much more enviable cap situation going forward as it increases to get in the conversation for all of these star players again. So they might have to take their lumps this year, but I don't think this really kills them long term, do you?
Well, Chris Paul's a free agent next season.
And then Blake the year after that.
Yeah, so you know, things could either turn around very quickly when they've got the cap space to bring mm-hmm. someone else in next year, or the wheels could fall off really quickly as well. If Chris Paul, because we know Chris Paul wants to get to the championship.
He's tired of this.
He is tired of not being able to make it out of the West. So I think Chris Paul is happy in that situation. I don't think that he's looking to leave. But if they all of a sudden take a step back this year and they're 7-8 seed, they get swept in the first round, then I think that Chris Paul is then in play if there's a situation where he feels like right away he can step into a true contending framework. Because, you know, Chris Paul's not getting any younger.
Pat Riley makes a phone call.
Right.
Of course. Yeah, there are meetings to be had at that point. And then Chris Paul could be taken off. He'd be very frustrated. I'd be frustrated in his position. Especially the Lance Stephenson deal seemed a bit like a fleecing, maybe. But when you trade away your backup center, when your center's a free agent and unhappy, it didn't make a whole lot of sense, especially in retrospect. But even at the time, it seemed a little bit odd to be trading away
the
your
timing,
backup.
The timing
timing was weird, right? And so...
And we're not certain that Lance Stephenson is good anymore.
No.
You know, he was good with the Pacers and Larry Bird and all these adults that trusted him and let him be the player he could be. And then he got to Charlotte, and all the reasons that he fell to the second round came up. That's why he fell. What happened in Charlotte? Mm-hmm. Now that he's around a bunch of adults, can he get it back? You know, he saw his NBA life flash before his eyes a little bit. You know, they can waive him after this season. They won't have any financial obligation, and no one will have to sign him ever again. Mm-hmm. But Chris Paul is notoriously prickly, and Lance Stephenson is notoriously prickly. If this situation goes south, like you're saying, which it could, Blake Griffin could get hurt. You know, he's got a history of injuries sidelining him for a while. And if he has to play a lot of center, that's going to be a lot of extra banging.
Oh, yeah.
He gets into a situation where Chris Paul is at another first-round exit, and he doesn't see any way they get better unless a Hail Mary, Kevin Durant's coming to the Clippers, something of that level. He could easily find himself making max money in any one of about 10 different spots. Mm-hmm. Where do you think he could go? Miami feels like in play. Would he go try to take short money to play with LeBron and what he's doing? Because, you know, all these guys are buddies. You know, they all talk. They could work something out. What do you think? Do you think that this is a real crossroads for the Clippers? Where do you think this could go for them?
Well, it could go a bunch of different ways, but I don't see it as good. I really don't. Unless they can somehow figure out a way to bring in a rim-protecting center that's going to help Chris Paul right now, I do see it going kind of badly. And honestly, if I'm an NBA player and I look at the landscape, I'm of Chris Paul's nature and I want to get to a championship, I'm not going to hang out in the West. I'm going to go to the East.
Yeah.
You know, I just am. I'm going to figure out some way to do it. And I don't know how. I'd take less money and absolutely go to some team in the East. It almost doesn't matter.
Matt Milner's really excited.
That's the Bucks. Yeah, that's that's what I think.
I see it right now. His name up in lights in Milwaukee. Chris Paul to the Bucks.
If he has a previous relationship with Jason Kidd, maybe.
Yeah, actually, I mean, I say it sort of jokingly, but from a pure basketball standpoint, how fun would that be? Can you imagine?
Chris they could Paul really running win the title. Floor?
Yeah, with Giannis and Jabari and Greg Monroe to dump the ball down. That's a really
Yowzers.
Fun. Yeah. But anyway, I mean, I think obviously there's a lot that's going to change between now and then.
Yeah.
But the lesson to me, the fact that we're even entertaining this scenario now after, you know, DeAndre Jordan leaves, is mm-hmm. it just as a reminder that to contend in the NBA, you have such a slim margin of error and you have the tiniest window. And even when you think that you have a 4 or 5 year window, you do not.
Never count on it.
Yeah.
Ask the Chicago Bulls of 2011 if they had a 5 or 6 year window.
And talk about a team that we haven't brought up yet, Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
Oh.
A team that should have had a decade long window that could be closed
next summer.
1 year from now. 1 year from now. The Indiana Pacers, who 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, it seemed like were poised to be the second best or best team in the East for the next 3 or 4 years. And now their roster is completely turned over.
David West is gone. Roy Hibbert's gone.
And David West is giving up $12 million to sign somewhere else because he wants to sign with a contender.
And yeah. it might be the Cleveland Cavs.
For like $2.3 million or whatever the you know, taxpayers.
He is literally going to leave 8 figures on the table. Mm-hmm. To go wherever it is he goes. It's either going to be Cleveland or San Antonio, it looks like.
And literally 18 months ago, the Pacers were arguably looking like the best team in the East.
They really did. Yeah. They really did. They were
best
doing
bet,
something special.
Yeah, the best bet to battle LeBron and Wade and Bosh year after year after year.
Yeah.
It just doesn't happen like that.
So when you have a chance, you just go for it. And that's why I love the Spurs, you know, moving mountains and doing what they have to do to bring Aldridge in, because they know that even though you've got a young Kawhi on a great contract and you've got Danny Green on a great contract and you've got your culture and all that, that once Duncan's gone and Ginobili's gone and Tony Parker maybe already is not going to be Tony Parker again, you just have to go for it. And it makes it fun. And we'll see who succeeds.
The window is this year. That's literally the only way you have to approach every summer. And the way that the league is set up now with the cap exploding and the shorter contracts, this time of year is always going to be one of the most talked about times where you see half the league's fortunes change in the course of a week. And that's why we talked about it for the last hour, and that's why we're going to do this episode of Can't Wait every single summer, because NBA free agency means every year is brand new. Mm-hmm. The Warriors are still going to contend for the title, obviously. The Cavs are still, wherever LeBron is, they're going to be great. But I want to say 15 teams completely changed the course of their trajectory over the past week. And that's only going to continue.
And we haven't talked about all of them. We haven't talked about Toronto. We haven't talked about a few teams that made some interesting moves.
Yeah, Damari Carroll's big payday. And, you know, the NBA free agency is, without a doubt, the best offseason of any of the sports. And that's what we're going to leave you with here on Can't Wait. But before we go, let's see. Do we have anything to talk about on the current, Rusty?
This Friday, DJ Dirty Verbs, Logan Phillips, will be on my show.
Oh, Logan. He's a good dude.
Yeah, he's really good. I love Sonoran Strange. I mean, it blows me away. I've long been a fan of the poet William Carlos Williams, who wrote about place and how it affects time over the course of eons or even just generations. And I really think that Sonoran Strange is in that mold of William Carlos Williams. And so I'm really excited to have him on.
Very cool. Matt Milner, anything you want to tell the listeners?
Yeah, well, by the time you listen to this, the week will have probably passed for locals only. But if you're listening to it, you know, sometime in the middle of next week, then you can be looking forward to next week's locals only, when on the 15th, I'll have Jillian Bissett coming on.
Oh, hey.
And she was on last year, did a great job.
An excellent job. I loved her performance.
Yeah, so she's coming on with Jillian and the Giants, and I think that'll be really good.
And for the rest of the summer here on Can't Wait, we're still going to talk about sports, but things are going to mellow out sports-wise, so we're going to throw in a few more nonsense topics. Next week, we're going to talk about Pixar movies, and we're going to talk about what makes a sports TV show or a sports movie work, and what makes it fail. But right now, I think we're going to go back to Twitter and see what Adrian Wojnarowski, what more NBA free agent moves break. That's going to do it for us here on Can't Wait, and we're going to keep doing this until someone tells us not to.